Blog Talk Radio.
Sunday evening. I hope everyone had a great Thanksgiving holiday. I know that most of the panelists were out celebrating, and obviously that's why everybody's here but one. So we'll be working with Don. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. How you doing, David? How was the holiday?
It was interesting. It was good. I went out of town, so I had a great experience. Traveling the United States during Thanksgiving holiday. How was yours?
Great. It was wonderful, man. I had the family spending time together. I had my, all these years I've had the opportunity to have the family at my house. I got two daughters and two grandchildren, and everybody is always at my house. Well, this Thanksgiving, I was able to go to my daughter and my son-in-law's house, and my wife and I, and I didn't have to cook. Man, it just felt so different.
Well, that's good. Very good.
Yeah.
Well, Michael joined us now, so now we have two. Michael, how are you doing, sir?
I'm good, David. How you doing? How's the panel doing? How's everybody doing?
Well, it's
doing
just
good.
Hey, Mike, how
you doing? Man,
I'm good.
I'm amazing. You doing well?
Yeah, man. I saw you on the picture with Don D.C. Kerr. That's one of my favorite comedians, man. So shout out to you.
Man, Don D.C. Kerr is a good friend of mine, man. We've been knowing each other for years. He came into Miami, and I hadn't seen him in about 15 years. What a wonderful guy, man.
Yeah, he is. He's a very good guy. I met him several times out here in Los Angeles when he comes and does shows. He's a very good guy.
Yeah, he was bragging about his farm in Atlanta. Say he got pigs and hogs and cows and horses.
Yeah,
that's a good thing. Well, to answer the question, I think David, you were asking about Thanksgiving. I had a wonderful Thanksgiving. I was able to spend it with my family and people that love me and that I love. And I hope everybody enjoyed their Thanksgiving. That's a day of giving and a day to be happy. And I was really happy that day.
Well, that's very good to hear. So since most of the panel is not here, just the two of you right now, let's just get into what might be on you guys' mind. But let's start with Don. Anything you wanted to discuss this week, Don?
Well, I wanted to ask Michael what he thought about the Kevin Newsom and DeSantis debate.
Oh, thank you for the question, Brother Wiggins. I thought it was incredible. And, of course, I'm going to say that my man Gavin Newsom won it, my governor here in the state of California. And the reason why I'm going to say that, because not everybody's willing to go into the lion's den and battle. Gavin Newsom went on a Fox News, which is an all-right Republican-leaning network, and had the moderator, Sean Hannity, the most far-right-leaning conservative you can find, moderated. And he held his own. He didn't just hold his own. He won the fight, in my opinion. If Newsom was the underdog going in, and he still held his own, he was the victor in that. That's my opinion.
I think you're 100% right. I mean, he just smoked DeSantis. Smoked him, man. I mean, I was just sitting back listening to Newsom, And, you know, I gained more respect for him out of this debate. I really hadn't followed him very closely, but I'm going to start following him even more so now.
Oh, yes, yes. I've obviously followed him. I worked on his campaign back when he was the lieutenant governor, even before he was governor. So I've known him for well over 15 years, and he's always been a stand-up, solid guy. Straight-up, solid, honorable, straight-up dude. Like, seriously, there's no lying, no fakeness, no none of the above applies to Gavin Newsom. He's a great man, and I don't say that about a lot of people, but he's a great man. He really is.
All right.
Yeah, I don't think DeSantis was really prepared. Do you?
No, I don't think he was. I think he thought it was going to be a cakewalk because it was on Fox News and because Sean Hannity was the host. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. I'd like to welcome Jeremiah too. Jeremiah, how was your Thanksgiving?
It was. It went pretty well. Went pretty well. Spent time with family, et cetera. Can't complain.
Michael, did you want to bring something to the table?
Yes, David, thank you so much for calling on me. Yeah. Yeah, I want to talk about, we touched on it back in the day about this guy, George Santos, New York, who just got expelled. They voted to kick him out of the Congress because of a bunch of lies and stuff that he told on his resume. Only the sixth person in history to be expelled from the United States Congress. So, and he's a Republican, by the way. So, yeah, I want to throw that to the panel and just hear their thoughts on it. Do they think that was a good idea today of let the people decide? What do you guys think about that?
Well, Don, what are your thoughts?
My thoughts are I was surprised he was able to get that far. My God. I mean, if it had been you, Jeremiah, David, or Michael – we would have never gotten that far. They would have dispelled us quickly. This man just stole money from his campaign. I mean, had Botox. I mean, all kind of stuff, man. And spending money like a drunken sailor. And just, I mean, made a mockery of that office in New York City at that. Oh, my God. They should have got rid of him with the quickness a long time ago. Why did he last so long? I can't understand that.
Yeah, I don't get it either, man. And like you said, if it would have been you and I, we would have been out of there. If it had been any person of color, I'm just going to go ahead and call it that, they would have drug us out of there by our ankles. So I think that has a lot to do with it. But to their credit, they eventually did get him out of there. I'm pretty surprised. I didn't think the Republicans had the heart to do it. But they got him out of there, so... You know, I give him credit where it's due.
All right. Jeremiah, something you want to bring to the table?
Not as of now. Shortly.
Okay. There seems to be a lot going on. The United States just shot down some drones over the Red Sea out there. So that means they were shooting at U.S. commercial ships. It looks like we're getting more and more into close to a war. What are your thoughts on that, Don?
I think you're absolutely right, David. I mean, here we are, Ukraine. I mean, billions of dollars we've sent to Ukraine. It's crazy. And then Gaza and Israel, billions of dollars we've sent. I mean, we've got ourselves into supplying two major wars in the world, and America is on life support. I put it mildly. America's on life support. Here we are supporting financially two major wars. And then the thing is, we're so preoccupied. China's sitting back looking, investing in Africa. I mean, investing in major, major properties. They're going to go into Taiwan real soon because we're going to be so occupied with other things that really aren't real substance to us. You know, they say that we need to take care of Israel. They say we need to take care of Ukraine because of Russia. When is it going to stop? My God, why can't we just get along, like my boy said? Why can't we just get along, David?
Wish. All right. Okay. Anything else anyone would like to bring to the table right now?
Yeah, I did, David. If I can, I wanted to add on about this war situation. Yes, it's very scary, David, and we are very, very close to going to war. And you're right, Don. We're stretched so thin trying to protect Ukraine, trying to protect Israel, but we're not taking care of what's going on here at home. We've got a lot of internal issues that we need to fix here. It's amazing to me how we have money for all these other countries, but we don't have money to fix the pipes in Flint, Michigan, and people are drinking dirty water. We don't have money for that. We don't have money to help pay off this student loan debt that are just crushing America. I mean, crushing our economy. We don't have money for that, but yet we have a blank check to send to Israel. That bothers me a lot, especially when I think about how the Israeli people have killed 15,000. 15,000 people they have killed since October the 7th. Most of them were women and children that the Israeli people have killed. And yet America and Joe Biden keep sending them money, unlimited amounts of money. That means America is supporting a genocide. Joe Biden is supporting a genocide. And I think that's going to hurt him in the election coming up. He's going to lose a lot of people of color, especially Muslims, who was a major part of his base. He's going to lose them behind his stance on this war. That's my opinion. I would love to hear what you guys think about that.
All right. Jeremiah, you got thoughts? I guess not.
I'll let the other guys go first.
Okay. Don, you got thoughts?
You're absolutely right, Michael. We're going to lose a lot. He's going to lose a lot of support from the Muslim religion. And, I mean, just think about it. Israel, big old giant, fighting a mosquito, man. God,
mm-hmm.
I mean, fighting a mosquito. And we supported it. I mean, mm-hmm. we just backed Israel on everything they wanted to do. And then they had a ceasefire, right? They had a ceasefire mm-hmm. to take care of people. And then it's almost like saying, okay, we're going to have a break from killing y'all and give you some food, but we're coming back to get you. We're coming back.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden they start fighting again. Come on, man. My God.
Because Israel's an apartheid state. What they're doing to those Palestinians in Gaza is in the form of apartheid. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about that. So many ways, America is an apartheid state. We were clearly an apartheid state during Jim Crow. But even there's still residue and remnants of Jim Crow here in the United States. So it doesn't surprise me that we would stand locked, strong, and barrel with Israel in apartheid state, because we're an apartheid state ourselves. There's a saying now that people out here are calling him Jim Crow Joe. That's what they're calling Joe Biden. His new name is Jim Crow Joe, because he's from the Jim Crow era. He is, and he still has Jim Crow beliefs. So him and Benjamin Netanyahu, they're kind of one in the same as far as the oppressing the minorities. So it shouldn't shock people that we're supporting this genocide in Israel. It really shouldn't surprise people.
All right.
Man, I tell you, I just don't know. Now, let me ask. Now, here's the kicker of a question.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. After we get done bombing Gaza,
mm-hmm.
who's going to take care of the Gaza government?
They're going to put a straw man in there. Israel wants to put somebody in there that they can control. So basically, they want to annex that place. They want to to answer your question, Brother Wiggins. Israel wants to govern Gaza. That's their plan. They want to govern Gaza.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Wow.
And it's literally going to be Back of the Bus Jim Crow 2.0. That's what it's going to be.
Michael, this is Jeremiah. Let me ask you a quick question. Have you heard anything about they're aiming to aid Gaza, well, making like a port out of Gaza, because there's out of that region, it's only one area that, you know, we can embark on shipments to the United States and other countries, even from China and et cetera, because you would have to go all the way around Africa and come back up and things of that nature. But I've heard that they're really trying to it's a money and power move as well, trying to control Gaza in a sense.
Without a doubt, Jeremiah, 100%, you're 100% correct. It is definitely a money play, and we're talking about the Jews, and we know they all about the dollar bill, y'all. We know that when it comes to the Jews. So, yeah, it's definitely a money grab. It's a land grab and a money grab, and it's coming at the expense of 2 million Palestinian people. And just for the record, just FYI, this is something I recently found out. There's 7,000 Palestinians currently in prison in Israel. And the law in Israel says if we lock up a Palestinian, they have no court date. We can just lock them up indefinitely, basically. They have no judicial rights at all. So they got 7,000 Palestinians just sitting in jail indefinitely, haven't been to court, haven't been charged with anything, just sitting in jail. That's sleeping. That's all that
does it. I was going to say that. Does it sound like modern-day slavery or something here?
That's all it is. That's all it is, slavery. 7,000 people sitting in jail with no court date. That's slavery. That's all it is.
All right. That's a great conversation, but let's move on to the United States a little bit. Do you know that the rate of alcohol-related deaths in the U.S. rose 30% in the first year of COVID? That people were using alcohol for some reason to combat COVID, and there was a 30% rise in related deaths, which is kind of difficult for the United States. What are your thoughts on that, Don?
You know, David, we haven't seen the true effects of COVID.
Right.
Alcoholism, drug abuse, gambling, all the devices were magnified in a major way because people were isolated, David. They were isolated, and we were meant to assimilate and be around people. And we were locked down for 2 years, isolated, scared. And those devices were crutches for people to release themselves. And we haven't seen the effects. Fentanyl, big time. Fentanyl has surpassed heroin. And children being killed with fentanyl. And drug abuse, alcoholism, gambling. I mean, all the devices have not really been calculated and the true effects of how it affected America in a big way. It's not out yet. More is going to be revealed.
Yeah. Well, you know, we talked about originally. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, in addition to that, you know, alcohol is being, you just think about it, right? Videos, music videos, the whole entertainment industry, they're pushing alcohol more than they're pushing anything else. When it comes to music videos, when it comes to the songs, when it comes to even on YouTube, you know, if they're sitting down at a podcast, you know, someone has a sponsor with some liquor. So, you know, if you're being paid to push, and that's the sad thing, a lot of people can be paid to push the wrong narrative and the wrong, you know, phrase and outlook that supports a group of people or support anyone. You know, like we have young adults, even younger now, suffering with this, the need to feel like they need to drink, they need to go out, they need to, you know, post-pandemic, you know, even relating to the pandemic, I remember when it looked like a club at the liquor store. They were the only things open. I got a friend that said that was his biggest regret because the liquor stores made so much money. And guess who's running liquor stores? Guess who's the majority owner of the liquor stores and the liquor license? We wouldn't guess it. I wouldn't say it. But you guys have an idea. Everybody listening has an idea. So, you know, it's ridiculous of how, you know, certain groups of people in the world are pushing the narrative, but they don't accept that narrative. Their children wouldn't even drink liquor, and they don't go about drinking liquor. But, you know, liquor and entertainment is the biggest budget they got to push and market and to make more millions and trillions of dollars off of it. It's crazy.
Yeah, and who's suffering? People like me and people like you, people of color, we're the ones who are suffering because everybody of color, especially black people, know growing up in my life, there was a liquor store on every corner in my neighborhood. And when I moved to a whole other city, I was living in Houston, Texas. I left Houston and moved to Los Angeles. And it was the exact same thing in the black community. I couldn't believe there was a liquor store on every corner.
And
I guarantee you
could probably not even count on one hand how many black owners own liquor. How many black people own liquor stores? Is everybody else?
Yeah, not one of them. Not one. I would say not one. I didn't see not one that was owned by a person, a black person. They were selling poison in our community, making a profit off of us.
And then also, just like the shoe deals with the NBA, et cetera, they will get these entertainers. They know that, for example, black people. And I don't want to make this a black or color thing or whatever, but it's just straight facts. You get a rapper or a female singer or an R&B person. A lot of black people idolize celebrities, idolize entertainers, right? So they get them to push a liquor. They pay them. They're pushing the liquor on every song, on every show appearance, every podcast interview. They have that liquor in their hand. And guess what they're promoting? And we don't realize as people that it's not only affecting adults, it's affecting young adults, it's affecting young kids, because if I see it that much, somebody that's 16 years old is seeing that and thinking that's the way.
Yeah, I'm going to quote the great Michael Jackson, Jeremiah. All I want to say is that they don't really care about us.
And that's the case, we definitely need to come together and care about each other and promote each other and help each other understand the differences of how, you know, other groups of people assist in destroying our lives.
You know, gentlemen, and then during the pandemic, here's what was so terrible about it. We were isolated, and then they put out that stimulus money. Here our people were isolated with money. Some of them didn't even have to work and had money, okay?
Correct.
In a neighborhood with alcohol, wig stores.
You ain't got nothing to do.
Chicken joint.
With a lot of money.
And wig stores.
You're getting unemployment and stimulus. Uh-oh.
Yeah. And see, and you know something? If you don't know the purpose of a thing, you will abuse it.
Yep.
Especially when, like Jeremiah said, when you got your favorite rappers like Snoop Dogg and Drake and these big names, and they're promoting and they're telling you that that's the thing to do. That just, like Jeremiah said, that just makes it even worse.
Our major problem is individuality. We're thinking as individuals and not as people. You can't give me any other nationality that does that.
I would say our problem is we're crabs in a barrel because they control the message, so they control what we think. So it's not that we would love to think better, but they force
no,
us
I
to
would,
think a
I
certain
was,
way.
I was speaking directly to the names you mentioned, and I heard lately, I think Snoop Dogg said he was giving up marijuana. But how can I not tell my child not to smoke marijuana when you have a so-called idol that's blistering it like crazy, like as if he's getting A's and B's, as like your kid is a 4.4 GPA student. That's what they're talking about marijuana, like it's so terrific.
Yeah,
so
well, even
I heard,
so
I heard technically he gave up marijuana. But what I'm saying is those guys at the top, when you understand you have a following, a cult, a following, you become an individual. Now, the people at the bottom, don't get me wrong, they're confused. They're misunderstood. Not as much teaching. And it's up to the men in the community as well. You know, men have to raise men. Men have to raise little boys, teenagers, et cetera, and even sometimes help women understand. But, yeah, everybody's become – when you make a little money, they become an individual. There's no togetherness.
All right. Very good conversation. But I want to bring up a point as men, what we're thinking about, because there's a major issue. First of all, we talked about war possibly coming up. Then we talked about alcohol. Well, science or doctors have come out and said there's a respiratory infection that is surging among children. And the respiratory syncytiotic virus is infecting children greatly. And they're all going to, a lot of children are going to be very sick soon. So as men and fathers, we have to really think about which way this world is going, and especially the United States, and put our thoughts and everything together to try to make it better. So what I want to ask is if this group can make a suggestion for men at this point, what would that be? Let me ask Michael, what would you suggest to those that are listening, who are family members, who men who are running their families?
I'll first of all, I would suggest education. That would be the first thing I would say, because as Jerry, everybody's hinted to, lack of knowledge is a major hurdle in life, period, but especially in the community. So I guess I would just say education first. Educate your family. If you're the head of your household, if you're the father and you're the leader, make sure that your followers are educated. Make sure they get some sort of schooling. Make sure they read, at least try to read one book a month, or just make sure they have knowledge and they're not dummies. So that would be my suggestion, is just to educate them.
That's a good thought. Don, what are your thoughts?
I agree 100%, Michael. And the thing is, we as men need to really step up and understand who we really are. You know, before God even created women, he used to have a communication with man. And then he said, it is not good for man to be alone, so he made woman. So the man should be the spiritual leader, protector, and provider. And we as men, especially men of color, we've got to know who we are. We're kings. We're children of the king. We come from a great country, a great nation. And I think that down through the years, they've isolated us and even paid the woman money not to have the man in the home to educate the children. I can remember back in the 60s, they were paying child support to keep the man out of the home. And they had people that could go to the home if they found any male clothing in the closet, they cut her off from receiving any financial benefit. So it's crazy. We've got to understand how the responsibility, we've got to educate our children, educate our youth. I mean, not only our biological family, but our diaspora, our complete diaspora. We got to step up and be leaders.
One thing that I've always been watching and noticing, especially here in Atlanta, most people here, most Americans don't seem to have much age diversity in their friendships. There was a study that just came out recently that found that for a group of young adults aged 21 to 30, more than 80% of the people in their social circles, not counting relatives, were born within 5 years of them. Even looking at a broader age range, near 63% of adults don't have any close friends who are at least 15 years older or younger than them. You know, and according to the AARP, spending time with people older or younger are how we can start getting everything back under control in our lives. What are your thoughts on that, Jeremiah?
I more than absolutely agree. And that goes for me too. I am a young male, and I had a customer yesterday. I was probably at her house another 2 hours just talking to her, understanding what life was 30 years ago, understanding what life was 40 years ago, understanding there's a lot of things we can understand. It starts with education, and it starts with the willingness to befriend, because nowadays, millennials, we think that we need to befriend people that's going to encourage fun, excitement, and joy in our lives. But also, we still need the other part that encourages learning, teaching, information. You can never ascertain enough information in life. I don't care how old you are. I think information and access to information is very important. And so what you're saying, a person of age would have more information, because we got to realize that everybody that's an adult now could have not had their biological mother and father in their life, or if they were raised by someone other than their biological parents, or even if their biological parents wasn't a teacher, wasn't that type of parent. We have younger parents now that are very young and you know, 35 years old, and you've got a high school student. You know, people are having kids really young. So, you know, having that walking hand is very, very important, because there's a lot of different scenarios that could have happened. But I just think having a person to have your hand that understands and that could show you and teach you is very important.
I agree. What are your thoughts, Don?
You're absolutely right. You nailed it, Jeremiah. I mean, I am my brother's keeper. I am my brother's keeper, and I'm going to leave it like that.
All right. Michael, what are your thoughts?
Hear ye. I agree with you, Don Wiggins. I am my brother's keeper. I say that all the time to my friends. And I think that's something that more of us need to start saying and realizing that we are our brother's keepers.
That is a good comment, but what thoughts do you have on how to bring in people from both sides, older and younger, too? Because most men don't look at that as a good thing.
A lot of people don't, and I think that has to do with this a generational thing, David, because I grew up in the 90s. I didn't grow up with Instagram, Facebook, social media, and all that. I grew up at a time where I learned a lot. I gathered a lot from hanging around older people, from older people in my life. Is they gave me the game, because they have already been here, so they were teaching me things that I hadn't experienced yet that I was going to experience. So it's definitely beneficial, and it helps when you're a young man to have an older man or older friends or older people in your life. It doesn't benefit you to just be around a bunch of people that are the same age as you. And that's even for older guys. I'm an older guy now, and I have younger I call them my little homies. I got little homies that I hang around with, and they teach me a lot. I actually learn from these young guys, and they learn a lot from me. It goes both ways. So, no, I don't think it makes any sense to only surround yourself around people of your age group. I think you definitely need to diversify.
That's right.
You know, David, living in South Florida, excuse me, has taught me an awful lot. Because I'm living in a region that is a melting pot. We got the Haitians. We got the Jamaicans. We got the Bahamians. We got the Cubans. We got the Venezuelans. We got the African Americans. We've got every diaspora in the world living in South Florida. And I have an opportunity to go to Hialeah. I have an opportunity to go to Weston, where the Venezuelans have taken over Weston. I have an opportunity to go to the other Little Haiti and so forth. And then I have a chance to go to Liberty City. And we as people of color, we don't do like those other nationalities. They get together, Dave, and they rent a home or buy a home with 5 or 6 bedrooms, and all of them stay in one house, and all the money is pooled to that one house. And then they spread out One will leave, get a good job, go buy this property. Another one will leave, go buy this property. This one will leave and go buy this store. And then we, as people of color, we want to kick you out of the house when you get 21. When you get 21, you grow. You need to leave home. Go get your own place. Stand up. Be a man. Buy your own bootstraps. Oh, man. I'm receiving revelation knowledge like never before, David, and that's the way we grew up in the 60s, 70s, 80s. Get out. You're grown enough. Get out. No. Keep them at home. Keep them at home until you can build some generational wealth. I'm about to start preaching. I better stop right now. I better stop.
Okay. That's good. So I see Mr. Solutions came in. Do you have some thoughts you want to bring to the table, sir? Hello? I guess not. All right. So, Jeremiah, did you come up with anything you would like to bring to the table?
Well, just to further that conversation we were having, just that, you know, I feel as if, you know, in the near future, we have to, as men, aid our young men in understanding. And because if they just look at TV, that's the wrong direction. If you just look at Instagram, I believe that's the wrong direction. And also, a lot of times, they were saying, you know, when you're 18 years old, you can go on your own and fend for yourself, but I don't think that's the case. I think that a young kid should be learning a trade, or not even if going to college, learning a trade to actually learn how to adapt. Because even in Miami, getting a job at even a full-time job and trying to be on your own is not really going to work, because it's so expensive to live and maneuver. And then sometimes you will find a young adult doing the wrong thing to try to make things work and make ends meet, which will put the child at an adverse position. So I just think that, you know, ending that, I just think that, teaching, we need to teach our young adults a lot better and help them understand things a lot better. And not give up on them, because technically, just because you're 18 doesn't mean that you're ready to be on your own as a man or a female.
Yeah, I'd like to chime in.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I happen to agree with everybody here, especially the last part. When you're 18, you're not even emotionally developed. Psychologists have said that the 25 years of age is where people are now becoming finally somewhat mature. So you really shouldn't kick your kids out of the house. Just make room for them. Let them go out, get a job, and bring back some money in order to pay for some of the rent. But if you kick them out suddenly, without any kind of support, what are they going to do? They're going to flounder around in the water of life. So I happen to agree with you guys.
Yeah, right. and then with the cost of living the way it is, I mean, a two-bedroom, two-bath home or apartment in South Florida, you're looking at $2,500 to $3,000 rent. And then you're looking at food. And then you're looking at gas. Then you're looking at insurance. Then you're looking at incidentals. Man, you've got to be making at least $5,000 to even survive. I don't know about you guys, but when I was 25 years old, I wasn't making that kind of money.
Or even 19 or 20. I think it starts with, and I think it, you know, I've seen different scenarios where a younger.
Okay, Jeremiah, you broke out. I can see you're still talking.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. Sorry about that. I can see it where a young adult gets a job at a great Chick-fil-A Publix, grabs an understanding of customer service, and then, you know, continues to go to school and, you know, find a trade or something they would like, because you're still not understanding what you would like to do. So even trying to work full-time and pay full-time grown people's bills, that's a lot to ask for from a young adult. I think they should remain in the home, be aided by their family, whether it's your mother, your father, your uncle, anyone that understands life, because you're not ready for life at that time. You're not ready for full-fledged life at that time. So, yeah, and then, you know, pick up a trade, go to, you know, military, college, anything that suits, and build from there.
If I may, real quick, to piggyback on what you said, Wiggins, it's like that here in Los Angeles. A two-bedroom apartment in L.A. is $2,500 a month. If you want that apartment, you have to make three times the rent. So you have to make $7,000 a month, $7,500 a month,
just
which
to get
is $90,000 a year. You need a $90,000 a year job just to get a two-bedroom apartment.
Yes.
That's not sustainable. That's not sustainable at all in any way, form, or fashion. Because the average person making $90,000 a year is going to get a mortgage.
Hey, Michael, and that's not including the credit score.
Yes.
And there's something else that nobody's mentioned either. How about the student loans? That'll drown you faster than anything else.
Yes, and now, in order to get the $90,000 a year job, you have to have some sort of advanced degree. You're not coming out of high school working, getting a $90,000 a year job. But if you got that advanced degree, you got hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of debt that you have to pay off. So
yes.
The way the system is set up is just like I said, it's not sustainable. America, we're heading for a disaster here. We really are.
And then here we are supporting two major wars, sending billions of dollars, and we got the situation that we are discussing right now, gentlemen. This is a man's voice. Come on.
All right, gentlemen.
Well, I don't know if you've ever discussed this before, but as far as I'm concerned, all of what's happening in the United States and, in fact, around the world is being done on purpose in order to create conflict and chaos and divide not only the world, but just to talk about America where we live, to divide Americans amongst themselves across the sexual lines and the race lines and political lines. So I don't think that America is going to survive past 2025, frankly.
Ooh,
I agree.
Strong,
I agree with that.
That's strong.
Yeah, I agree with that.
You know, you got my
totally
vote.
I agree with that. Yeah.
When I say don't survive, I'm talking Mad Max. I'm talking either an EMP attack or a false flag attack on utilities, which will wipe out the grid. And once that happens, just imagine. There would be looting in the streets, killing in the streets. People would be hungry, and everybody would be killing each other. And the police won't do anything because they'll probably be told to stand down like they did a couple of years ago in Portland. And the military, I meant to say the cops won't do anything. Military won't do much either because the military will have been bought off by the globalists.
All right.
I agree with that. Go ahead, David. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Did you have something to add to it?
No, I just said I agree with him. I agree with him 100%. And anyone that's listened to the man voice, I've been on this show, I think 6 years now I've been on this show. I've always said that America is the days are numbered for America. It was coming to an end. So I've been saying that for 6 years. So I agree with that 100%.
You know, our caller just pinned 2025, and he brought that date closer to what we've been talking about, Michael. We've said it was going to happen, but I was mindful to hear him say 2025.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Okay, so I'm getting comments from the listeners, and they want to ask the panelists a question. What does it mean to be a patriot in the United States? So how does one, what does it mean anymore to be a patriot? What do you think, Michael?
Am I hearing that correct? Patriot?
Yes.
To be a patriot, what does that mean in America? Me personally, I'm not a patriot, so I really don't have a solid answer for that, but I'll give it a shot. I think it means someone to support your country, stand up for the flag, stand up for the national anthem, or just be a red-blooded American and believe everything that America stands for. I guess that's the definition of being a patriot. I'm not one, once again, so I can't really answer that question full-heartedly.
Okay. What are your thoughts, Don?
Well, be a patriot. I'm kind of confused. You know, I love America. That's all I know. I was born and raised in America. I love America. I think America is the greatest country in the world. But I don't have anything to compare it to. But the thing is, I look around the globe and listen to what I hear. We are so fortunate to be an American. But the thing is, I think we've lost track. We've lost track of our true purpose as being leaders. You know, we've adopted the thought that we must take care of the world. And I was taught a long time ago by my dad that you take care of home first. Charity begins at home and then spreads abroad. And we become the breadbasket for the world, trying to get in everybody's business. Well, we got some serious problems right here in the patriarch of America. I just don't like what I'm seeing.
All right. Jeremiah, what are your thoughts? What are your thoughts on what it takes to be a patriot?
Well, I understand how to be patriotic, and I understand what it is, but as I've grown as a man, a young adult, what I can't put my head around is I've seen it's publicized, it's history, it even happens now. Why are we creating division amongst minorities, whether it's the Latin community, whether it's the Black community, whether it's the white community? I thought we were all one. So as you grow, you know, as a kid, you know, I was led to go be a Marine. Right. I'm very, very patriotic person and would have loved to be a Marine. I'm not going to say I'm glad I didn't do it because that's just the type of man I there's a lot of heroism in my soul there. But what I'm saying is the things that you find out that the United States have aided in with our people who live here in the United States, whether it's they've aided in or they're currently doing is distraughtful, not pleasing. You know, it takes you by surprise. So, you know, I don't know how so many people can remain patriotic with what's happening in the United States at this current time.
All right. So we had a couple of callers on the line. Any one of you might have any comments on that?
Yeah, my name's Joe, and my comment is a patriot is somebody who should be standing up for the American values of the American system. However, the fly in the ointment is that the American values and the American system are mainly theory. I'd like to investigate the founding of America to discover whether or not the Constitution actually was a coup. If something which is taught in school is that there was a constitution called the Articles of Confederation for the 7 years of the Revolutionary War, which was good enough to take care of America during the war, and then all of a sudden when the revolutionaries won the war, then that Articles of Confederation was substituted for by the Constitution. So when I ask people who was the first president of the United States, people, of course, will say George Washington, and I'll say there were 8 presidents before him that nobody knows about. But that's slightly diverting the topic. Today, to be a patriot. And I've tried to get people together to be patriotic here on Blog Talk Radio. It's like herding cats. The thing is, people should recognize what America is about, what it should be about, and most of all, realize that the American political system is corrupt as hell. And as a result of the propaganda and its hold on the media and on academia, it has a tremendous influence over the minds of people, especially the impressionable kids growing up in elementary school and high school. So one should think, how do I preserve my country, protect it from attack from without and from within? And the attack from within is from corrupt politicians. So if people can find a way to get rid of the corrupt politicians other than saying, voting them out, I'd like to hear about it.
Anyone can answer that?
I think the dismissal of the one we talked about earlier was a start in the right direction, sir.
All right. And Michael, you want to say something?
Yeah, I don't think there is a way. I think that's impossible, because you get the nicest guy or gal in the world, once they get elected and get that power, it corrupts them. So I don't think you're ever going to get rid of the corrupt politician. It's not that it's a bad apple. It's the whole tree that's bad.
And then someone corrupts another. A new person that comes in that's fresh, clean slate. Next thing you know, 2 years later, bribing, accepting bribes, accepting things that you shouldn't accept. So that's really tough.
That is true. Harry Truman said once that he never saw a politician who, once he entered office as an honest politician, ever left office as an honest politician. So they do get corrupt. What we have to do as people is wake up and know how to vet our politicians. I've done that, and I've shown it on Blog Talk Radio how to grill a politician to get the promises out of him within the first month of his being elected. And then if he doesn't fulfill those promises in the first month, he can be elected out. He would agree to have a petition to get him out of there before he gets even worse.
You know, you bring up a very interesting statement, and I've always thought that being a politician was a way of being or obtaining a convenient occupation. Let me put it that way. What are some of the questions that you would pose to a politician to bring that out, sir?
What I've asked them is this. I said, well, you know, once you get elected, you're a freshman assemblyman, a freshman congressman, a freshman senator, and you know you have no power, right? And they say, yes. So I say, well, okay, you don't have any political power within your particular party because Pelosi and McConnell, they control it. So what you can do is that if you're against corruption, You can go and ask every one of your colleagues in your party, or even who are not members of your party, and to ask them, would they be willing to help you fight corruption within Congress, for example? Those that say yes and those that say no, you publish in a newsletter to your constituent that elected you. Would you be willing to do that? They all say, oh, yeah, that sounds good. I said, well, good. Then, if you don't do it, would you be willing to have your constituents sign a petition that gets you out of office within a month or two? They don't want that. You know, they're all willing to do the what they say they can do, but won't do it, of course, once they get in there. But at least it lays the groundwork for trying to find people that will show the constituents that they're full of crap. Yeah, they're hypocritical. Some politicians actually have on their website a kind of a manifesto in which they say, if I don't do what I say, you know, you can vote me out. But I like to say, do it within a month or two. Just call up the members of your party and ask them. They don't have to sponsor a bill, they just have to say, yes, I'm with you. I think we should investigate corruption in Congress. And those that say yes and those that say no, you publish to their to your constituents. Now, if you're somebody who's very popular and somebody who's got a lot of press, those people that say no, they're going to be exposed.
All right. Any other thoughts for the table today?
Yeah, I do.
Go ahead, Michael.
Yeah, okay. I have a thought. I wanted to ask the panel, since this is a man's voice, this is a real man question. And I saw some on the internet where a guy and his wife were out on a date, and another guy complimented the wife, and the wife said, thank you. Now, my question to the panel, was the wife wrong? Should your wife tell another man thank you if that other man gives her a compliment? My answer is no. If I'm out on a date with my wife and another man compliments her, she better not say thank you to that other man. I'm just curious. I want to hear what the fellas say about that.
First thing I would say, she has a large willingness to be disrespectful. That's very disrespectful on the wife's part. Secondly, I would say, now it depends on what he compliments her about, but there's not too many things someone else can compliment your wife about while at dinner. So, yeah, that would be very disrespectful.
All right.
What do you think, Wiggins? You're married.
It would really depend on what he says, what he compliments her for and about.
Okay.
You know what, Michael? It's probably nothing that I haven't said already.
All right.
One more thing I'll say, it shows the willingness for her to feed into another male, because women are emotional, right? So if you haven't said, sometimes some women want to hear it every day. So if you haven't said in the last 24 hours, or you don't say it as much as she wants, that moment in time for her to be justifiable, like somebody else thinks it and you don't, so it depends on a woman, but I think it's very disrespectful. And if she's willing to do that, she's willing to do other things as well.
Oh,
agreed.
Greg, what are your thoughts? All right. Okay. Anybody else got any other things to bring to the table?
That is a good question. I'm sorry. I'll go after you. Yeah, the woman should say yes. Now, again, it does depend upon the compliment and the circumstances. Let's say I'm out with my wife at dinner. I go to the bathroom. She's by herself. Some guy sees her, wants to approach her, does, tells her she's looking very, very good. And he asks her, are you married? Do you have a boyfriend? Are you by yourself? She says, yes, I'm married. He goes, sorry, walks away, and you look lovely. She should say thanks and smile. No harm done.
Okay. Any thoughts on that?
Was that the scenario, Michael?
No, the scenario was, it was an internet prank, and the husband and wife were walking, and the guy just, some random guy just told the lady, wow, you're beautiful. And she said, oh, thank you. And the husband said, how dare you say thank you to that?
Wow. All right. Well, you have been listening to The Man's Voice, and we will be back again next Sunday at 6 o'clock. And I know there are a lot of questions about Christmas gifts and what do you buy men for Christmas, and we'll answer some of that next week. But we respect and appreciate all of you, and we welcome you to come back, and you could call in and have conversations also. Again, thank you for being here. We hope you all had a great Thanksgiving, and we'll be back again next Sunday at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Thank you, everybody.
Great show,
fellas.
Great show.
Great show.
Have a good weekend. Go Kings, baby.